I'm Frances Callier.
And I'm Angela V. Shelton.
And we're Frangela.
You know what you need in your life? The Final Word Podcast.
Yes, you do.
That's right. It is the final word on all things political and pop cultural.
Where we make real news real funny.
Where we inspire you so you can hashtag resist.
Subscribe and get a new episode of the Final Word Podcast each week. It's the news we think you need to hear.
That's right. We think you need to hear it. Okay.
Yeah, it's what we say so.
That's right. And because all we do is give, every Thursday you can listen to our hysterical podcast, Idiot of the Week.
We round up the stupid because you know what? Somebody has to.
Okay. All we do is give.
Our press secretary gave alternative facts to that.
My goal in this deposition was to be truthful, but not particularly helpful.
Welcome to Unspun, the podcast that makes you better at finding the truth. The way people get news is changing. It used to be that there were many reporters who would research stories and write articles, but now politicians and famous people share information directly with you on social media and the internet. That means you find out things fast, but it's up to you to make sure the information's actually accurate. And newsmakers don't always do their part. The temptation to manipulate information is strong. They bend the truth to deceive so that they can avoid accountability, so that they can advance their agendas. When you recognize these agendas, you can sometimes find out what's real. And we're at a crossroads where anyone can share anything online, so it's important to sharpen your critical thinking skills. Finding that deception before it goes viral is pretty much a survival skill now, and we're gonna do it together. Let's get unspun. Hello, truth seekers, and welcome to this week's episode of Unspun. We've seen a newish phrase arise from media critics in this election cycle, sane washing. That means covering someone in a way that hides curious or concerning things about the way they're talking. And that made me think about what we as journalists do when maybe we want to quote people. So in today's episode, I'm going to break down for you the decisions that journalists make when they're listening to someone and trying to extract information from what they said, and how that could actually lead to sane washing. Before we get going, though, I want to ask you a quick favor. If you're listening and you've ever gotten any value out of Unspun, I would really appreciate it if you would go in right now in whatever podcast app you're listening to and just leave a rating. When shows get good ratings, it does help with their discoverability, but more importantly, it makes it easier for me to book great and interesting guests. So if you have just a couple of seconds to leave a rating or maybe a minute or two to write a short review, I would really appreciate it. Okay, let's get Unspun. We call them quotations in print and on the web, and they call them sound bites in broadcast stories, but they always do the same job, which is to get the actual words of a newsmaker in front of an audience. And it's something that I've been teaching students how to do for more than 20 years. I thought I'd give you a little idea of how that lesson goes. The first thing I'd tell you, as well as my students, is that quotations are not magical. They aren't any kind of protection for you, and they're not some sort of must-have in a story. But they do some important jobs in news. First of all, they help to put the credit or blame for what is said on the person who said it. If I quote you directly with quotation marks, most people would agree that there's an understanding that the words inside those quotation marks are special and do reflect exactly what the speaker said. That direct quotation is putting all the onus on you, the person whose words are inside the quotation marks, not on me, the person who's writing it down. A journalist would want to include direct quotes when their source is saying something that's opinionated, when they're saying something in special words that give insight into the character of the speaker, or when they say something kind of risky. So for example, if a source says that he thinks the neighborhood has gotten worse since that church homeless shelter moved in, some people might find that offensive. So I might quote that source directly to make it clear that it was the speaker's words and not mine. Second, I tell my students that quotations are helpful because they make a story more credible. They tell the audience that you did interviews and were careful to get down what the person said. Third, quotations can help make a story more dramatic. So for example, someone who wrote out a hurricane in a manufactured home is probably going to have a better and more picturesque way of describing that experience than I might if I'm just imagining what it was like, or I did interviews and I asked them and then I changed their words. So they can kind of help to make a story more dramatic. They can also make a story less dramatic. For example, if you're doing a story about test scores in schools in your area, often you will interview someone from those schools. And those people can be really great at speaking in a lot of what we might call edubabble, or education jargon that's hard to understand. So including that quote will just suck all the life right out of the story. Finally, quotations are also helpful because they can reveal the speaker's personality, maybe the strength of the emotion that they're feeling right now, and that kind of firsthand information from your source is irreplaceable. How does all of this relate to seine washing, though? It has a lot to do with the way journalists are trained. Imagine, if you would, that you're interviewing somebody and they have a little grammatical slip. Maybe they say something like, "Yeah, me and her are going to celebrate our win later." Grammatically, that should be "she and I," right? But should you, as a journalist, just correct that and leave quotation marks on it? Do notice that there's a little bit of an ethical question here, because if I put down exactly what they said the way they said it, I could make them look ignorant. And that may be a little bit unfair. I mean, it's true. But on the other hand, I feel like all of us make these sort of informal grammar mistakes when we're talking, and maybe we don't need to see that printed in black and white for the whole world to see. So maybe I'm being mean. So should you clean up that little grammatical slip? As I tell my students, technology has in some ways answered that question for us. So a lot of stuff that you would find quoted in print or on the web are now in video form as well. So you can find them online or on social media. And because of that, your audience is going to know that you changed something but left it inside the quotation marks. And that can be a giant hit to your credibility. And even if technology had not answered that question, the Associated Press has also weighed in on this. The Associated Press is not the Society of Professional Journalists and its code of ethics, but it does offer a set of rules and practices that many professional journalists adhere to. And the AP says you should never alter quotations, even to fix those minor grammatical slips. There are a couple of limited exceptions. So, for example, they say that you can make changes to things to put them in what they call AP style. This is a set of rules for how you write things that are going to make them consistent for other AP members who might use your article. So just as an example, I live in the U.S. state of North Carolina, and our governor is Governor Roy Cooper. Now, I just said the word governor, G-O-V-E-R-N-O-R. AP style says that when you write that, if it's a title, it should be written G-O-V, period, as an abbreviation. So if you are quoting me, you would go ahead and just write G-O-V, period, inside of the quotation marks. And that's because it's really just a matter of how you're transcribing what was said, but AP sees those as being the same words. So you could make that change, but you wouldn't make wording changes because, as I tell my students, quote means contract. It's an agreement between you and the audience that the words are the same. So AP suggests you avoid altering quotes for meaning. For example, a lot of times when you ask someone a question, they will answer the question without putting a subject in the sentence. If we're doing that test scores story, we might have had somebody who said, when I interviewed them, quote, "We're really happy about how they did this time," end of quote. In a quotation, I could choose to clarify what they were talking about by inserting, in brackets, the word "students." So it would read like, "We were really happy with how bracket students bracket did this time." And AP says, you can do that, but almost never should you. Like I said, quotations are not magical. And so sometimes you need to get a source into a story, but you don't need to quote them directly. And sometimes, and really I should say a lot of the time, it's actually better not to quote them because they just don't say things in a nice, easy to understand way. In that case, and I've been teaching this for more than 20 years, you would go to a paraphrase, and AP agrees on this too. In a paraphrase, the writer is restating what the source said, but in maybe better words, and these words are then attributed back to the original source. A paraphrase is a little bit less credible than putting the words actually in quotation marks because you're asking the audience to trust you, the writer, in using good judgment. And what I think is happening with seine washing is that people are thinking that writers who are paraphrasing and condensing are using too much judgment to the point where it becomes bad. I think a lot of people understand ideas like greenwashing, where companies try to appear eco-friendly if they're not, or maybe sports washing, where a country might use a fancy sporting event to detract from their bad record on human rights. In seine washing, the accusation is that the media is taking something that's messy or maybe harmful and packaging it in a way to make it seem more palatable. That's the accusation. And, you know, in this case, the criticism has been about taking politician words that are rambling or incoherent or even offensive and smoothing them out and quoting them as a paraphrase to make them sound more reasonable for public consumption. I think this can happen because in some cases, it's just the way journalism works. You know, reporters are actually trained to find the heart of a story and to be clear and concise for the readers. Readers want that. You know, it's seen as a service to them to make it easy to understand the statements or the main idea of what someone says is the thing that you and the audience are going to have to deal with in the story. So honestly, AP tells you, and I will tell you at journalism school, that if someone is saying something with difficult to parse or understand speech, you don't quote them, you paraphrase them. there's also this big, huge pressure right now on journalists to be objective and to kind of skirt accusations of being biased. And this has been especially true with Donald Trump, who is pretty well known for making false or misleading statements. I want you to notice how I worded that. False or misleading statements. I worded that carefully, and I did not say who is known for lying. Reporters have to be really careful when they're trying to check facts, when they're trying to characterize the way that somebody said something. And I feel like in some ways, reporters are wrong if they do and wrong if they don't. But some media critics have suggested that normal campaign reporting processes just aren't working with Trump. Here's an example of his speech from a recent rally.
Because of MIT, my relationship to MIT, very smart. He goes, I say, what would happen if the boat sank from its weight and you're in the boat and you have this tremendously powerful battery and the battery's now underwater and there's a shark that's approximately 10 yards over there. By the way, a lot of shark attacks lately. Did you notice that? A lot of shark. I watched some guys justifying it today. Well, they weren't really that angry. They bit off the young lady's leg because of the fact that they were not hungry, but they misunderstood who she was. These people are crazy. He said, there's no problem with sharks. They just didn't really understand a young woman swimming. Now it really got decimated, and other people too, a lot of shark attacks. So I said, so there's a shark 10 yards away from the boat, 10 yards or here. Do I get electrocuted? If the boat is sinking, water goes over the battery, the boat is sinking. Do I stay on top of the boat and get electrocuted? Or do I jump over by the shark and not get electrocuted? Because I will tell you, he didn't know the answer. He said, you know, nobody's ever asked me that question.
So how do you report that? Would you report that story at all? Would you report it and say what he's saying doesn't seem like it makes sense? Is the not making sense the story itself? When the media has tried to push back against Trump, so has Trump. Have a listen to this.
You know, I do the weave. You know what the weave is? I'll talk about like 9 different things and they all come back brilliantly together. And it's like, and friends of mine that are like English professors, they say, it's the most brilliant thing I've ever seen. And, but the fake news, you know what they say? He rambled. That's not rambling.
Was that shark story a weave? Recently, we've seen some news outlets that are changing their approach, figuring that traditional ways of quoting and paraphrasing someone might not be working anymore. And it's hard when you're dealing with somebody who doesn't always say things that are true. So news outlets are left trying to find a balance between being accurate and avoiding being accused of being biased, and that's a really hard place to be. And it makes you wonder, what exactly are you supposed to do with this kind of rambling incoherence? That's the million-dollar question. Do you ignore it? Do you try to smooth it over and make it sound more sensible? Do you present it exactly the way it comes out with its flaws and let the audience decide? This is actually a weighty question, because the way that journalists present these moments impacts the way the public views a politician, right? It shapes their understanding, it affects their confidence in his character, and, you know, when you think about it, is this the kind of person they want giving speeches in front of foreign leaders, for example? You know, are they even fit for office? The Poynter Institute is a professional journalism organization, and they suggested in an article that journalists need to think about their purpose. So don't just include quotes as filler material, but every quote should have a purpose. So although you might not choose to quote something rambly about sharks and batteries, you might actually choose to quote something rambly if it was about immigrants coming into your kitchen and cutting your throat, because that shows something dehumanizing or even dangerous. That might be worth directly quoting, because it's useful for the audience to know that a potential candidate is saying these kind of things. One of the things that has happened is that because the media is so used to extracting the meaning and just giving the easy-to-understand things to the audience, in some ways I think rambling or inflammatory speech even has just gotten normalized. You know, the more you hear it, the less shocking it becomes, and maybe you just learn to accept it. Oh, that's just the way he is. It's just the way he talks. Ultimately, I think that makes it harder for voters to make good decisions. The Poynter article suggested that one way to get around this is to be transparent about the journalism process. When you choose to use an inflammatory quotation, you explain why. If you're offering context for what someone said, you say why. As the audience, we don't just need journalism that challenges our assumptions, we also need journalism that helps us to understand. And you're now seeing some stories that are trying to move past the sane washing. That is largely because of criticism that the media got. And remember, there's a part of the SPJ Code of Ethics that says that news media are ethically responsible to dialogue with their public. So all of you should not be afraid to call out journalists who are doing a lazy or bad job. And honestly, now that the media is running some of those extended clips, those speeches, it lets us in the audience hear some of the rambling and some of the questionable claims. You know, reading it is one thing, but actually hearing it kind of makes it more real. Late-night comedians, surprisingly, have done some of the best job of this. Now, they're playing for laughs, of course, but it's also been a good place to actually hear these longer quotes. And hearing these gives you a much better understanding of what reporters are dealing with when they're trying to cover someone like Trump. It's a powerful reminder that sometimes the best way to fight misinformation is to just present the truth, even if it's messy. Doing that is, of course, trusting the audience to draw their own conclusions. We, as news consumers, need to remember that we have a responsibility to be critical thinkers, and I hope that's why you're here. I think the complaints about sane washing are actually a positive sign, right? It shows that people are paying attention and are concerned about what political discourse is like. I appreciate you, truth seekers. Thanks for getting Unspun with me this week. Unspun is a production of me, Amanda Sturgill, and is a proud member of the MSW Media family of podcasts. Send me your thoughts and ideas about trickery in the news on Gmail at theunspunpodcast@gmail.com. I even write back. And find this episode's show notes and more information at theunspunpodcast.substack.com. Want to learn more and get smarter? Check out my book, Detecting Deception, Tools to Fight Fake News, which is available on Amazon or your favorite online bookseller. And until next time, stay sharp, everyone. No surprise that newsmakers try to manipulate the audience. They want you to believe that they are the one holding the line, and they'll use any trick they can to get you there. But don't let them fool you. Get unspun. I'm Amanda Sturgill. I've been a reporter, and today I teach future reporters to cut the spin and think critically about what newsmakers say. My podcast, Unspun, shows you how to know when you're being manipulated by the news. Learn to spot the tricks and how to make up your own mind about what's true. So if you're tired of being fooled by the news, subscribe to Unspun today. Unspun, because you deserve the truth.